Wake up, everybody. Welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, or we try to navigate through all the propaganda they're heaping on top of us today. And something very fishy is going on at the White House right now on multiple levels as it relates to the storm preparedness from the Biden White House and the fight that just unfolded behind the scenes at the White House with Kamala Harris, a physical altercation. But all of this, of course, tied to what's happening right now in Florida. And Florida officials now saying, get out now. You must evacuate. And the lines for people, on I-4 trying to go up and get out of there, get into Orlando and beyond, is just unbelievable right now. So we're going to look at all of this and the Biden administration's response to Hurricane Milton as it heads towards Florida.
Meanwhile, Kamala Harris has chosen a subset of media to do that she obviously thinks is going to be friendly to her. It hasn't been that friendly. We're going to talk about what she has been able to put forward to the American press. Have we learned anything new? Anything to see there? How is she handling it when she's pressed on the issues?
By the press. But I think that this is tied to the first story. I think that this whole sudden push by the media, it's really interesting. Anyway, we'll talk about that. Also,
the media is telling us that we hit peak obesity, which would be great in the United States, except it is because the pharmaceutical companies are selling you drugs that will give you lifelong diarrhea. So we're going to look at whether or not we should celebrate that. I would not celebrate lifelong diarrhea in any capacity.
Is there any way to get nausea with that too, or is it just the diarrhea? Because I would want the combo package. I would want to be nauseous and have the diarrhea.
Yeah. Nauseous and?
Yeah. Oh, also, yeah. New studies show you could go blind as well when you take Ozempic. So do that if you want to just be... Yeah, so it's a 1-2-3 punch. It's the diarrhea, it's the farting, it's looking old, it's all of that stuff.
Yeah. Also, we're going to talk about... We're going to speak with a whistleblower today on the show, a veteran pilot from American Airlines, who has been put on administrative leave, illegal administrative leave, and he's being unpaid for 2 years now because he called out the hypocrisy and what was happening with the COVID mandates, the mask mandates, the COVID mandates, all of those things. He's going to join us because it's absolutely stunning right now. He's actually suing the FAA now because of this illegal mask mandate and COVID mandate. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment. So we're going to get to all of that is everything all right?
Yeah, yes. We apologize. You might hear our air conditioner just turned on, and I'm going to turn it off when we get to the news.
All right, so we're going to do that in a second. But first, Halloween season right around the corner. One of the best ways to get into the spooky season is to throw on a good movie right now. And guess what? I love using ExpressVPN because we all have different streaming subscriptions out there, and a Halloween movie marathon can get expensive fast, but not if you have ExpressVPN. So let me change. This is what's really fascinating. You can actually change your online location, trick Netflix into showing different movies and TV shows that aren't normally available in the United States. And so I was able to use ExpressVPN the other day to jump into the UK, yes, into London, and specifically get some content. There's a fantastic spooky content over there in the UK that you cannot get in the United States. All sorts of different movies. It's really fascinating. You can actually jump into Canada and get The Godfather, but you can't get it in the United States. What the heck? It's really weird. Anyway, ExpressVPN lets you change your online location, trick Netflix or any of your online streaming services into doing that. But it's not just about subscription services. It's also a way to use strong encryption to protect you from real life monsters like hackers and data thieves that are coming after you. It also comes with a password manager, which helps you manage unlimited passwords and credit card details. It's the best way to protect your privacy from the creepy stalkers and spooky creatures out there. ExpressVPN works on all your devices, laptops, iPhones, tablets, even smart TVs. So right now, you can get your money's worth. Get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN for free when you go to expressvpn.com/redacted news. That's expressvpn.com. That's expressvpn.com/redacted news. To take advantage of that and get 3 extra months right now. So our thanks to them for sponsoring and supporting what we do here at Redacted. We appreciate it. Well, yes, Tampa, Florida is on the list to become a new 15-minute city. It will happen. through the Tampa Moves plan. Yes, you heard me right. Tampa, Florida is on the list to become a new 15-minute city. That's right. The 40 acres of waterfront property is owned by none other than Bill Gates through an investment fund, waterfront property in Tampa, Florida. Now, thanks to Patriot's Voice for that little Bill Gates part of the story. I knew that Tampa was on the list among Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine. There's a bunch of other cities right now that are sort of on that target list to become 15-minute cities, and Tampa is one of them. And right now, of course, in the eye of a hurricane. But again, Patriot's Voice, I didn't realize Bill Gates was actually behind it and the funding for it. But that shouldn't surprise any of us, right? He's behind all of it, it seems. And so that, just put that in your brain as you think about this story about Tampa, Florida right now and the storm surges that's about to hit there. But first, get out now or die. That was the message from Florida this morning. Hours ago, Tampa Mayor Jane Castor issued a blunt warning ahead of the massive hurricane that's about to hit. It's being called worse than Helene. She said, those who choose to stay will likely die due to this storm. This is the largest storm to ever hit Florida in modern tracking history. It's the largest storm to hit Tampa since 1921. Hurricane Milton, a Category 4 storm at this stage, is expected to bring unprecedented tidal surges up to 15 feet, surpassing the devastation caused by Hurricane Helene. The U.S. Air Force just a short time ago flew through the hurricane and found that it's now strengthening once again. So this thing could go, you know, down to three, Category 3, up to 4, maybe up to 5 again, back down to 4. It's hard to tell at this moment exactly how big it's going to be once it strikes, but there's no escaping the fact that it is going to hit Florida. There's no way around it. It's going to be massive wherever it hits. You know, we could talk about the specific spots of where in Tampa, north, south of Tampa, it's going to hit. It's going to hit the coast, and it's absolutely devastating. Just look right now at people trying to get out of there. It's like wall-to-wall traffic, people trying to get out. They've, of course, shut down water. They've shut down sewers. City of Orlando has lowered the water levels of the river capacity now to try to absorb as much of this as possible in Orlando. Castor, the mayor, stressed that the storm's catastrophic impact could be unlike anything residents have ever experienced and wants people out of there right now. And it seems, according to the reports that I'm hearing, that people are heeding this warning and they're getting out of here. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to play around with this. Well, and trying to stay.
You know what else is in Tampa, right? Is the Capcom. So all the communications for all the ships and warships and everything in the ocean and all that. So it's like, oh, right,
there's
there.
There's a lot of stuff in Tampa. There's a lot of what I'm trying to say, intelligence community stuff in Tampa as well. So this is going to be devastating. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris is trying her best right now to pretend that she's in charge. You know, it's almost she's like a paratrooper trying to like parachute in right now. Like, hey, I'm here, guys, and I'm going to put on a flak jacket and pretend that I'm part of this team. I'm going to suddenly pretend that I have anything to do with this. And President Biden isn't having it. So something fishy is going on right now at the White House. This is sort of the drama behind the scenes, but I'm telling you, something big is happening. Something very fishy is going on. There's a couple of different angles to this right now. So according to Jack Posobiec, just last night, there was a physical altercation between Jill Biden, who is essentially the president at the moment, and Kamala's staffers. Physical, not just an altercation, a physical altercation in the White House after Joe's press room last week began with accusations that the Bidens were undermining Kamala deliberately. And this is from a White House official. So somebody got in a fight with Kamala staffers about this. They think that the Biden administration right now, President Biden, is trying to undermine Kamala Harris.
Or you could read between the lines and interpret that as that Kamala's campaign staffers wanted to place her in the center of some action, and the Bidens said no.
Right. I mean, that could be the exactly. That's the point I think that is happening here, is that they're trying to stick her into these moments now. Go ahead, Philip.
Well, I'm just you know, like processing this, but so they're saying that the president of the United States is being accused of trying to undermine the vice president of the United States. Like that just seems a little on the backwards to me.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. What's happening. But again, remember, he wanted to run for president. He was thrown out in a coup, and he's still pissed about it. So the idea that, of course, he is somehow in love with Kamala Harris and her team is garbage at this stage. I mean, he was thrown out. And in moments of clarity, I'm sure he's aware of that. And Jill Biden, by the way, was furious about the whole thing, didn't want to have anything to do with it, and fought tooth and nail to make sure that President Biden was still the nominee in the new year.
Which, by the way, he was polling higher when they threw him out than yes. she is currently polling right now.
Yes. So it's devastating. And there's a couple of pieces. I mean, just a few minutes ago, actually, President Biden is in Milwaukee. So he's in Milwaukee right now. Again, all these pieces coming together, guys. Just kind of stay with me here. Just try to grapple all these apples right now as they come together. So her polls, new polls out overnight, show that she's doing really terribly among blue collar workers in America. That blue collar workers think that she's a fraud. Right. So these are hardworking Americans, blue collar workers. So what does Biden do today? He goes to Milwaukee and gives a speech in Milwaukee, not with Kamala. He goes by himself to talk about a steel fitting and the infrastructure package. He's speaking to blue collar workers. This is not a coincidence. On the same day that this new poll comes out, he's speaking to blue collar workers, basically showing them like, hey, I'm your guy. And she's tanking in the polls. It's fascinating. So yesterday, she accused Ron DeSantis of Florida of ignoring her phone calls. Here's the beauty. She gets on the phone and is trying to call Florida. Meanwhile, President Biden has already been talking to him. So she gets on the phone and he won't take her calls. Ron DeSantis is like, you're not going to play politics with this hurricane. You're trying to jump on the phone now and pretend that you're in charge. You're in somehow in charge of FEMA. You're trying to look presidential. You have no authority.
Well, to be clear, the press said that she had called and wouldn't take the calls. He later clarifies that I don't know who he called. She's not involved. So watch her sort of faux outrage as she's playing politics and accusing him of playing politics when really that's what she's doing. Yeah, let's watch.
You know, moments of crisis, if nothing else, should really be the moment that anyone who calls themselves a leader says they're going to put politics aside and put the people first. People are in desperate need of support right now. And playing political games at this moment in these crisis situations, these are the height of emergency situations, is just utterly irresponsible, and it is selfish, and it is about political gamesmanship instead of doing the job that you took an oath to do, which is to put the people first.
Yeah, so apparently DeSantis not taking her phone calls. She's trying to call and he's ignoring her phone calls. This is really upsetting liberals. This is really upsetting liberals on social media in Florida who are, you know, really upset that Ron DeSantis won't take phone calls from Kamala Harris. Just look at the liberal tears. Watch.
This is not political unless you make it political. This weather is not political. It's weather. It's not political unless you make it political. Ron DeSantis is refusing to take calls from the White House and Kamala Harris because he says they're politically motivated. We are in the middle of a fucking disaster. It's gonna come hit us. And he won't take calls from the White House.
Well, if you go to the governor's website, it has a long list of people that he's pretty worried about now. People in juvenile detention centers, people in nursing homes, animal sanctuaries. He's pretty stinking busy. And it is a long list of things that they're actually taking care of. Has nothing to do with anybody's campaign. So what resources does Kamala Harris have at her fingertips that Joe Biden cannot release? Who is it important to talk to at this point?
So here is Ron DeSantis. He responding to all of this. He spoke on my old show, Fox and Friends, this morning to the team over there. And he just slammed her. Listen to this response. Watch.
And we've been laser focused on leveraging all resources available, including from the federal government. And I've been in touch with both FEMA and the president, as well as marshaling all our state agencies and working to support our local communities. And so for Kamala Harris to try to say that my sole focus on the people of Florida is somehow selfish is delusional. She has no role in this. In fact, she's been vice president for 3.5 years. I've dealt with a number of storms under this administration. She has never contributed anything to any of these efforts. And so what I think is selfish
has she ever
is her trying
before?
To blunder into this. No. And here's
has
the
she
thing.
Ever called before?
She has no role. No, she has no role in this process. I'm in contact with the President of the United States. I'm in contact with FEMA director. I'm obviously managing all our state agencies. We're supporting all our local government. And I will say this. I've had storms under both President Trump and President Biden, and I've worked well with both of them. She's the first one who's trying to politicize the storm, and she's doing that just because of her campaign.
So actually, that was Hannity, not Fox and Friends. But nevertheless, he's saying, she's trying to call. I'm already talking to the president. I'm talking to your boss. I'm already dealing with the president at the federal level. And so President Biden, just about 2 hours ago, was asked directly that question. And again, so I want you to understand how this is all sort of coming together here. He just threw Kamala under the bus. Listen to Biden. Listen, you have to listen to some cacophony of some reporters yelling questions to him. But one of the questions specifically is about working with DeSantis. Did you talk to DeSantis? Are you working with the governor of Florida? And listen to his response.
Cooperative. He said he's gotten all that he needs. I talked to him again yesterday, and I said, no, you're doing a great job. It's being all being done well. We thank you for it. And I literally gave my personal phone number to call. So I don't know. There was a rough start in some places, but every governor from Florida to North Carolina has been fully cooperative and supportive and acknowledge what this team is doing. And they're doing an incredible job. But we got a lot more to do.
You can't have it both ways. She can't be in charge of the country and not take responsibility for the country. So that's her campaign. She's done great things as vice president, but everything bad she's not responsible for. She has no leverage on FEMA. The president is still alive and working, but she wants to be involved in FEMA and also show that she takes the credit. So,
yeah, so
okay,
maybe she
which
should.
One is it?
Head to the border now. Just go if the hurricane stuff is all taken care of by Biden and the governors, head to the border. Let's focus on that now.
Right. Well, she was just there, you know, and for the second time, really, or really the first time, because first time she was in a holding area. But yeah, I mean, so she's either taking care of FEMA's response, mm-hmm. you know, a big part of the hurricane response, both in Hurricane Helene and what's going on in Florida, or you're not involved with it. Or there's a third way, which is you go on The View and you somehow blame the federal government's response on Hurricane Helene. You've got to figure out a way to blame it on President Trump, of course, because he's not president. Watch.
Kamala, and I'm calling you Kamala, because for all of those who are mispronouncing it, I want you all to know how to say it. But let's talk about something you would do different from Donald Trump. Right now, there is a monster storm barreling yeah. towards my state of Florida,
yeah.
a place that's still reeling from Hurricane Helene. Mm. Trump is lying, claiming that yeah. the Biden administration is intentionally withholding aid from the areas where Republicans live and that FEMA funds are being redirected to migrants. Ironically, that is something he did in yeah. 2019. What do you think the effect of these lies are, and why is he doing this?
Well, it's profound, and it is the height of irresponsibility and, frankly, callousness.
Yeah.
So lives are literally at stake right now. I traveled to Georgia and to North Carolina after Hurricane Helene. In Georgia, I met a woman who, just days earlier, her husband was killed in their home by a fallen tree.
Yeah.
Days later, I met with her and her daughter. You can imagine the pain, the shock that they are still in about what they experienced, what they witnessed.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about real human beings and their lives and them losing everything.
Everything.
Everything. This woman lost her husband, her child lost her father. Mm-hmm. People are losing their home with no hope of ever being able to reconstruct or return.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the idea that somebody would be playing political games for the sake of himself, but this is so consistent about Donald
yeah.
Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He puts himself before the needs of others. I fear that he really lacks empathy on a very basic level to care about the suffering of other people and then understand the role of a leader is not to beat people down, it's to lift people up.
Absolutely.
Especially in a time of crisis.
Okay. She's
put on some sweats and go hand out supplies and stop doing all these press junkets.
Yeah, shovel some sand then into some bags. How about that?
Show us how human you are.
You know, of course, you know, if you look at how FEMA has been destroyed with DEI over the past couple of years, you know, this is a direct response to how the Biden administration put the, you know, the idea of equity in FEMA and restructured FEMA instead of focusing on the actual storm response and how they could marshal money correctly. They're worried about illegal migrants being labeled misgendered. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's FEMA's focus right now. And that was all done under the Biden administration. That was all done under Biden and Harris administration. So it's amazing to watch her just sort of parachuting in on these situations right now. And then it's more interesting, though, to watch how President Biden and the White House is throwing her under the bus right now.
Right.
And, you know, pointing out that she's not involved in this. By the way, if she was involved with this, they would have had her sitting next to President Biden today instead of Jennifer Granholm. They would have had Kamala Harris sitting right next to him during this press conference today, and they didn't. And they didn't do it on purpose.
I saw a meme that said, stop having press conferences while I'm on Howard Stern. It's inconvenient because I've decided to do friendly press now. Go ahead, David.
Well, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying it looks like Biden is intentionally trying to tank her campaign. And like, it does look that way. I mean,
yeah, it's hard not to see it that way.
She's the one tanking it, but he's just not saying the same narrative she is. He's telling the truth with this instance.
We got a super chat here from, is it Bo? I'm not sure how to say Boj. Says Kamala again hasn't answered the question as usual. Yeah, and then she folds and crumbles. You're going to see here in a minute. We're going to go through this. Her 60 Minutes performance yesterday was unbelievable. And just facing some serious questions and then follow-up questions, she can't answer them. Crumbling under pressure.
Yes, ready with her talking points that do not address the questions. So those of us who continue to have answers, how would you fix the border? How will you undo the damage that you've already done? How will you pay for your economic plan? Why do you keep changing your mind on things? We don't still have answers to that. We just have an archetype of a journalist who will ask them. So that's something, right? Some journalists still exists. So we're going to get to that in a second. But first,
yeah, I want to tell you guys about a company called Bunker. Now, Bunker is an app that is built by patriots right here in the United States. The founders have been in information security for 30 years. They've learned how cyber criminals think and operate. They've created a tool called Bunker to protect yourself and your family from everyday threats, not only from criminals, but also from big tech and surveillance. Bunker provides high secure surveillance, free messaging, which, as you know, in this day and age is under attack. Just look what happened to Telegram. Unlike other secret messengers out there, which have droves of imposters and criminals using their networks, your Bunker network is made up of only people you know and trust. This means imposters, cyber criminals cannot reach you and your loved ones. Bunker believes that everyone should be able to communicate in private, free from criminals, and have access to bank-level security in their daily lives. You can download it right now from the App Store or the Google Play Store or from their website. Again, you're going to get 1 year free. You'll get the whole first year free if you use the code redacted. So just try it, see how it fits in your life, but use the code redacted to get it totally free for 1 year. All you need to do is go to bunker.life. That's bunker, BUNKR.life today to download the app and use that code redacted to get it for free for a year.
Well, Kamala Harris is ramping up interviews after we've criticized her for not speaking directly to the press or to the American people. But her interview with 60 Minutes this week did her no favors at all. Now, we can't play you clips of that because 60 Minutes is very bullish about taking down anyone who shows clips of their videos. But we're still going to talk about it on this platform. I will show you the highlights. The transcripts are available. I linked you to them in the newsletter today so you can watch for yourself. But first, about their interview with Donald Trump. Now, the show made made a big deal that Donald Trump was one of the first presidential campaigns candidates not to appear on their show in the months before an election. In 50 years, they say that this is an important American tradition for the candidates to be on 60 Minutes, and they are very sad that he wouldn't do the show. This seems maybe more of a sad commentary on the waning influence of legacy media than a real flex on Donald Trump, but they still took the piss out of him, even though they failed us. They failed Trump, certainly, but they failed us as viewers with their 2020 interview of Donald Trump. Now, they say, hey, remember last time he was on here, he walked out. They do not say that they falsely reported his claims. Remember this 2020 campaign interview with 60 Minutes? He sat with Leslie Stahl. Here is that transcript, and you can see it yourself. And he says one of the biggest scandals was when they spied on my campaign. He means the Democrats. And she says, no, there's no evidence. No, she just keeps pushing back. Sir, she says, you know, this is 60 Minutes. We can't put things on that we can't verify. Well, it turns out that his campaign was spied on by the Clinton campaign. We learned that in the FBI's own Dunham special counsel investigation. In fact, they indicted a man for doing just that. Now, 60 Minutes should apologize to the viewer, or at least tell them, hey, last time he was on, we pushed back on things he said that we thought weren't true because we didn't bother to investigate it because he said it. Those things turned out to be true. We're going to do better this time. We owe you an apology. I mean, less, again, to Donald Trump than to us, the viewer, because they're saying those things weren't true. They were lying to us. She also pushed back on the Hunter Biden laptop and the fact that the Bidens had accepted money from abroad. Here is how they said, you know, these things are... He pushed us on the lack of coverage of the unproven and unverified charges about the Bidens receiving money from abroad. But those things also turned out to be true. We have seen evidence of that from the House Judiciary Committee and the evidence they presented that Congress doesn't want to really move on, and neither does the Justice Department, but they exist. We've seen the proof. So would you do an interview with them after this? They owe us an apology. They owe Trump an apology. They never investigated those things. They just wanted to say, we haven't seen that, and we won't, and you're wrong, and we're just going to keep saying no. Well, maybe since they were so off base on Trump, Kamala Harris thought that they would be friendly to her, and she was wrong. In fact, 60 Minutes host Bill Whitaker came at her for all the things that we have wanted answers for. It was really something to see. He pushed her on the border wall. Here is what she said. He said there was a historic flood of undocumented immigrants coming across the border for the first 3 years of your administration. Was it a mistake to loosen the immigration policies as much as you did? And she says, well, blah, 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 blah. You can read it for yourself. And he comes back at her. He's not having it. He says, well, no, what I was asking, was it a mistake to allow this in the first place? Well, blah, blah, blah. And he says, but the numbers did quadruple. Well, the numbers today, he says, under your watch, should you have done that? He is a dog with a bone. And she says, well, you know, immigrants, fentanyl, blah, blah, blah. And he says, again, should you have done that? She continues to push this answer that Congress needs to solve this and not her, which doesn't make sense because her administration lifted the requirements for immigration and open the floodgates. They didn't use Congress for that. They just did it. So how can she say, we just took the power to do it, but we need Congress to undo it? It makes no sense.
On day one of his presidency, they undid all of, through executive orders, they undid all of those Trump border policies.
Which was a campaign promise that she herself advocated for. In fact, she advocated for more during her own candidacy before she was named as the vice presidential candidate. So, well, again...
I'd say that's what she's running on now. She's saying she's going to fix the border. Like, she will fix the border. That's what she is saying. Yeah. She is going to fix it. But obviously, right, she doesn't think she actually can. So why is she saying
it? Right. When he's pointing out you broke it even more than it was already broken.
Yeah, and you skipped over a part because I know you're trying to keep it brief, but... He says, since Trump left, border crossings have quadrupled under your watch. Mm-hmm. This is 60 Minutes saying this to her.
Right.
So again, I come back to the segment we did a few minutes ago. Something fishy is going on here. CBS is a extension of the White House. It is a extension of the CIA and the deep state, right?
Yes.
And it is a liberal news station and an extension of the White House. Why are they I mean, they're destroying her with this. This is arguably one of the worst interviews a presidential candidate has ever given.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't give her any softballs.
No, and I mean, that was exactly my, as I was watching it, I was like, what is this? This is real. Why is this happening? Right. I'm prepared for the propaganda. The propaganda's not coming. I don't know what to do with this.
And not to pull the race card. I think it's good that they used a black interviewer to do the interview, because they would have been saying, oh, he was just attacking her because he's white and she's black.
Yeah, he's a racist. No, he's black. Oh, okay, no, it's fine. He's just a tough interviewer then. Right. He's not racist. He's just a tough interviewer.
Yeah. And again, I want to point out that this bill that they're pushing about Congress, the bill is to fund the border wall. It is not to solve the problem that has broken further under the Biden-Harris administration. It would not handle any deportation. It would not address illegals who are currently in the country. It would only strengthen the wall as it is now, which again, they have refused to do. So now how he pushed her on her economic plan, she really only spoke about spending, not about paying for it. Here are some excerpts. He says, you know, it's estimated that your plan would cost $3 trillion to the deficit. How are you going to pay for that? And she says, well, you know, her answer, well, economists like my plan. She doesn't say, like, people like it. Okay, that's cool.
So she says, okay, so the other economists like my plan.
Right.
Not the ones that CBS talked about.
Yeah. And he says, and she says, no, you know, she gives him this I'm speaking bit, but it's, you know, to invest in the economy, small business. And he says, yes, I keep asking you, how are you going to pay for it? Take a look. And she says, well, again, taxing the rich is one of her, you know, it's not fair. And he's like, we're dealing with the real world here. How are you going to pay for it? Because he quite correctly points out that Congress is not going to allow you to raise taxes, and there's been no appetite for them. And he says, how are you going to put this through Congress? And she's like, they want it. And he's like, no, they don't. Look at what he says next is, Congress has shown no inclination to move in your direction. No, actually, that's not true, she says. She doesn't say who supports it. She doesn't say how she would do it. She just says, actually, I think there is like a temperament for increasing taxes. I think I can do it, even though President Biden was not able to. I'm pretty sure I can. Now, he asked her about how she jumped over the primary process, and this was not in the main interview. This is in 60 Minutes Overtime. I think it should have been in the main interview because it was great. Specifically, he asked her, was democracy best served without a Democratic primary? He said, you didn't have to fight off any contenders in the process. That's not how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to be primaried. What she answered was that President Biden's decision would be remembered by history as rare, because he put country before self. She says she earned the support of delegates, not the people, clearly. And you might recall that she performed terribly in the 2020 primaries. So
yeah, she was the first one out.
Yeah.
She was at the bottom. I mean, she was behind Andrew Yang. She was behind Bernie Sanders. She was behind all of them.
Right.
She was out first. And so she's the candidate?
Yeah.
I love that he asked her that question.
Now, later he says, a quarter of registered voters say they just don't know you. They don't know what makes you tick. And why do you think that is? What's the disconnect? And now this part where she says, look, this is an election. I take it seriously that I have to earn everyone's vote. She says, I'm just like, did you just say that? No one should be able to take for granted that they can just declare themselves a candidate and automatically receive support. And I was like, you just did that 2 months ago. You just declared
no one should be able to take for granted.
Wait, what? That's what's happening.
You're living in the past, Natalie. You got to get over that.
Okay.
We're moving forward from here on.
Even Grover's pissed about
that.
You hear him.
Yeah. Okay. And he asked her why she's flipped on so many issues. And she said it's because she travels a lot and she's learned a lot in gaining perspective. And I think that's a valid answer. I don't buy it because she seems to have so much humility. This is my opinion. You don't have to share it with me. But yeah, it could be true. You gain humility and perspective from meeting people. Maybe that's the case. But, you know, I would like her to answer for the fact that, okay, do you think taxpayers should pay for transgender surgeries, for sex change surgeries? Do you think that we should defund the police? Do you not believe that anymore? Tell me why you think that's not the case. Is it because these liberal cities are dystopic hell? then, you know, that's more what I want to hear.
One of his pointed questions was specifically on flip-flopping on so many issues.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he says this, you've flip-flopped on every one of your major issues. You were totally against fracking. And she sat there. She didn't like jump in. He said, you were totally against fracking and now you're for it. You were totally against a border wall and now you're for it.
Mm-hmm.
You were, what else did he say? You were totally against, there was like a couple of things that he.
Yeah. It escapes me at this moment.
There was a whole bunch of them. And she just said, and then she just sat there and like wilted. Like she's like, oh, this isn't going to be the interview I thought it was going to be. Yeah. 60 Minutes is dead. So many people in the chat are saying it's dead. It has been for years. Exactly right. Maybe this is like 60 Minutes trying to revive itself once again by doing actual journalism.
Look, we both went to journalism school. It was presented to us as the gold standard of journalism in journalism school in the early 2000s when we were in school. Right. And so Clayton and I have always had this reverence for it. And it's a gut check
back
to us.
When
we were baby journalists just out of college. And now having seen them not apologize for lies, I'm not happy about that. But I don't know how to feel about the fact that there's one left. There's one person left who's willing to push for the truth. This reporter, Bill Whitaker, is welcome on Redacted if they punish him for it. I want to say that. Now, I cannot show you this, but there's evidence that her answer on Israel was edited in order to make her seem more favorable towards Israel instead of what the whole Biden administration and the State Department seems to be displaying to us is the fact that they cannot influence Israel, but they will not withhold aid. That's the story.
And so the video that CBSN put out on their website is an edited version of her response. You can actually watch the unedited version of her response. I don't understand why they would edit it. I don't get that at all.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. She talked about guns, too.
Oh, sure. You want to talk about
guns? So this was Bill Whitaker asked her about guns, you know, because she's flip-flopped on this position, right? So she talked all about, he's like, do you have guns? You use guns? She's like, yeah, I have a Glock. And okay, which Glock? Because if any Glock owner would probably, you know, give you the numeral afterwards. Is it a Glock 19? I mean, Glock makes 50 different guns. Like, which one is it? Like, how often do you fire it? Do you use it on a regular? So if if you ask me, like, what gun do you have? I'd say, I'd name the gun that I use and X365 or whatever it is, right? But she's flip-flopped on the magazine issue. And I was going to show you a magazine here, but according to YouTube's terms of service, we'd get in deep shit, so we can't show you that. This is crazy. I mean, this is how YouTube is. So I'll just show you my range bag here. But inside.
What are you doing?
I was going to say, because I was going to bring out a magazine and show it, but I can't show it.
You want to show what a gun owner actually talks like when they...
No. I wanted to point out a magazine because she specifically wants to eliminate high-capacity magazines. Well, as a Glock owner, you would know that that's a 10... It holds 10 rounds. So anything over 7 is basically what she's looking to ban. Mm-hmm. So she'd be banning her own gun. Okay. Right. So Bill Whitaker didn't push her on that. I would have loved for her to have like talked about that.
Maybe he doesn't know.
Well, maybe he doesn't. But, you know, he seemed to know a lot of other things. But she's like, oh, yeah, I shoot it. What did she say? I shoot it at the range.
He said, have you ever fired it? And she said, yes, of course I have at the range.
At the range.
Right.
Right. But again, so if she's got a Glock, which one was it? And does it then violate her own standards for high capacity? If she says anything over 7 rounds is what she wants to go after. And if she has a Glock 19, she's got what, 10 rounds? So she'd be basically eliminating her own gun. She's like, I would never want to take your guns. I'm a law-abiding gun owner. I'm a registered gun owner.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So your own policy then would eliminate the gun that you have in your own house, is what I'm saying. So the hypocrisy is thick with her on so many different issues. The gun issue is one of them.
Okay.
So many people online, of course, who are gun owners who are way more fluent in gun language and usage than certainly I am, were like, no one would respond this way. And by the way, calling out her hypocrisy on how often she's using it, like when are you going to a gun range? Tell us when the last time you've been to a gun range, because that would be well documented as Vice President of the United States.
Sure.
So in the last 3.5 years while you've been Vice President, we have a full calendar of all of your whereabouts and all of your appearances. Do any of those include going to the gun range in California?
Because that would be a Secret Service nightmare. is that your main charge is going to a place where they're only firing guns. Like, could you even secure that as Secret Service?
Right. I mean, I'd like for a White House reporter that has access to those White House visitors logs, the transportation logs for the vice president, they're handed those every day, part of the daily briefing, right? Where they're going to be, where they're traveling with, all of those things. We should know, as Americans, when's the last time you've been there? Like, you're talking about that you're not going to take people's guns away. Mm-hmm. And you're saying you go to the gun range, well, let us know then, because
well,
it's all
it's
should be
valid for her
record.
To say, I did this 10 years ago. I'm not practiced, but I felt this. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, but she didn't say that.
Well,
but she's also not trying to make us think that she's John Wick either.
She is, though. She's talked repeatedly about how she's a registered gun owner and they like hunting, and she and her husband like to have guns, and they're not going to take your guns away. So her policies.
As much virtue signaling as she does, if she was actually going to a gun range, they'd get that on film so that she could back it up. They would be there.
But
and they
liberals
would be like,
don't
want to
see that. It would upset
range.
Them.
Oh, yeah. It would totally destroy her liberal base. Right. She can talk out of both sides of her mouth. Right. That's a great point, Natalie. Like,
yeah.
They don't want to see that. They don't want to have footage of that, like John Kerry with a gun, going out hunting.
For you to say you have a gun, we just don't want to see you with it.
Right, exactly.
Sure. Okay, so she, while President Biden is doing serious press conferences about the hurricane this week, she is doing other, I want to say friendly media. She was on The View. We showed you that earlier. She was on Howard Stern this morning. She will be on The Late Night with Stephen Colbert. She was on a sex podcast called Call Her Daddy this week. Is this working for her? Well, what she's clearly trying to do is make us like her, because her policies are so vapid that what she really needs is this sort of star quality that I'm not sure that she's got, because what she's saying is more of the same that we have from this administration, is ratcheting up debt, continuing war, not solving the border crisis. Oddly enough, though, since liberals are following her around to these press appearances, people seem to be suddenly offended that she would go on Howard Stern because he has been offensive in the past. Like, who did not know that Howard Stern was offensive before today? Like, how could she go on there because he's used the N-word before? He's done much worse than that. He has people touch themselves. He has people get naked in the very chair she was sitting in. He has had fart contests. Like, why is this all of a sudden?
Suddenly people are shocked
that she would do Howard Stern when, again, Joe Biden did Howard Stern about 2 months ago. Go ahead, David.
Well, and in 2008, Howard Stern went on a tirade saying he was never, ever in his life going to vote Democrat again. Even if God was to become a Democrat, he would not vote Democrat. Like, he was on a tirade about it.
Why did he say that?
It was after Hurricane Sandy, right?
Because he said the FCC were communists for what they were trying to do to radio stations and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but now he's changed his tune, right?
Yeah.
Now he loves the war in Ukraine. He loves it. He loves all war.
He loves
the COVID
people
vaccine.
Dying, apparently. He loves
so
genocide.
He's some kind of, either he's been captured or he's just too far down the rabbit hole of the media echo chamber. I have no idea, but it's hilarious that people are thinking like, wait, he's offensive, but the sex podcast wasn't. Like, literally they talked about things that I won't say. This same host before Kamala Harris sat in that chair. So, okay. You let me know if you think that this is actually personalizing her. Is that a word? Personalizing?
I
made it up.
Depends on how you're using it.
And whether or not this is working for her. I just, because I'm so used to seeing the media telling lies, I'm very confused. I'm going to say, I'm confused that they would tell a lie about Trump and then also tell the truth about Kamala Harris. It doesn't compute in my, like, they're all captured. So I have to think outside the box. And so come with me and just observe. That's what we're observing together.
Yeah, it's insane. But again, I think I come back to the point earlier that something's going on here. Again, Biden throwing her under the bus. She's not a part of this hurricane preparedness photo op and press conference. He specifically talks about the great relationship he's had with Ron DeSantis and getting funds and stuff and everything that he needs to Florida. She's nowhere to be seen. Something's going on.
She is the border czar, after all. She's not the hurricane czar. So
that's right.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about the idea that perhaps we've hit peak obesity. We're the fattest we're ever going to get in the United States, and it's all thanks to a particular drug. This, wait till you hear about this garbage coming up. You don't want to miss this. Plus, we're going to speak to a veteran pilot who is suing the FAA, the FAA administrator, specifically over COVID. You know, they mandated that all these pilots get COVID vaccines, and they also mandated that they all wear masks. Well, this is a, first of all, they violated FAA medical standards to do this when these airlines decided to go around the FAA. So what does that mean for American Airlines? What does it mean for all these airlines that did this? You're going to hear from a veteran pilot who's now been on administrative leave for 2 years. American Airlines has said, you can't fly. You're not going to be paid, but we're going to keep you on leave right now. We're not going to fire you, but you can't fly because he was a whistleblower and spoke out against it. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But first, gold. Yeah, gold just hit an all-time high.
Yes, it did. And we talk about gold a lot on this show. Gold is going to continue to ratchet up as we are uncertain about our fiat currency that we use every day, because gold is not a fiat currency. It's a real thing. But guess what? So is silver. Silver is also a fantastic investment. It's a major part of our portfolio, and it doesn't get the news coverage that gold does. But many financial experts believe that silver is the best kept secret in investing, and it's a lot more affordable. You can get started investing in silver, whereas gold is a lot more expensive per ounce. And in fact, it's in industrial metal. It's in everything from cell phones to batteries to your refrigerator, electric cars, the medical industry. AI is the new buzz, and it's an all-consuming. It relies on silver. So back in 2020, silver was in a surplus, and solar was just a tiny source of demand, and AI was non-existent. But now, silver is in a deficit because of AI and the advancements in technology. So, in the words of Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, everyone can own some silver, and we agree. Now, our friends at Lear Capital can teach you how to do this if you just give them a call. And literally, if you call this number, a real person will pick up and they will ask questions. And they will ask informed questions about you and your portfolio and tell you whether or not this works for you and how you can get started. It's a very personalized service. You can go to LearRedacted.com and get them to contact you. But really, I suggest you call them because it's such personalized service. So call them at 800-613-3557. Or if you just don't like picking up the phone, because this is 2024, go to LearRedacted.com and they'll call you back. So again, silver just moved to $30 an ounce. And it goes back to records. And if it goes back to record highs, you're going to do really well. So call them 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Well, good news, everybody. Guess what? The U.S. may have hit peak obesity. That means we've been getting fat and fatter for the last few decades, but we may be on the decline of that. New data shows that obesity rates are declining ever so slightly. But here's the bad news. It's because of Big Pharma's injectable weight loss drugs, not because we're getting healthier, not because we're exercising, not because our food system is not poison, not because we've learned to reject processed food, none of that. Here's the Financial Times telling us, hey, great, we may have reached peak obesity, but here they say weight loss drugs appear to be having the effect at the population and level. But is it due to the weight loss drugs? They're saying that this could be the moment, much like 1963 when cigarette sales began to decline. They're saying a generation from now, we may look at 2020 and say, that's finally when we broke the hold like cigarettes had on us of obesity. Here is the trend of adults over 20. And they're saying this tiny decline at the top is why there's room for hope, is that we went from, I mean, this is still bad. Over 40%. That means 4 out of 10 people are obese and at risk of metabolic disease. But the reporting shows that fully 6% of American adults have tried these injectable weight loss drugs, such as Ozempic. That's 1 in 8 people. And who is it that takes these drugs? Mostly upwardly mobile, college-educated people. And the data shows they are the same people who incidentally see the biggest decreases in obesity rates. Now, the top article says that this is just magic. It's absolute magic because Americans have not been able to be warned away from processed food like they were from cigarettes. You say, see, it says what makes this remarkable is that in contrast to the mechanisms behind the decline in smoking, which was that public health warnings and tax and bans, with obesity, one single pharmaceutical innovation has done what those methods have repeatedly failed to do. Now, do you think the government has really tried to disincentivize poor eating? I don't see that. I don't think that's the case. So they're saying, we gave it our best. We tried public service. We tried tax incentive and bans. But Americans just can't put down the junk food. I don't think we did give it our best. I don't think at all that happened. But almost by magic, they say, these new drugs remove the requirement for willpower, which they call superhuman, making us feel fuller and reduce our appetite and alleviate cravings. Okay, so that would be great, except that we are learning through litigation that these drugs, not only do they not handle the underlying cause of metabolic disease and obesity, they also can lead to all sorts of negative effects. Nowhere in this article does it mention the problems with these drugs, namely that there is no safe direction for people to ever go off. So if you want to keep this weight loss off, you have to be on this forever. They are being prescribed to children as young as 12. That's been approved by the FDA. And there are dozens of lawsuits claiming not only that they can cause permanent digestive problems, including stomach paralysis. This one lady, she's a plaintiff, says she's suing Novo Nordisk, that's the maker of Ozempic, because she says that she will have diarrhea for the rest of her life.
I don't want that.
For the rest of her life. I mean, she will lose weight because things are going straight through you, right? That's the wrong way.
But also her teeth fell out.
Other people. Those are other plaintiffs saying okay. That they vomited so much that their teeth fell out. They're saying that causes permanent stomach paralysis. As of this month, there are over 1,000 cases claiming that Ozempic has caused patients' intestinal blockages and paralysis. Also, lawyers are gathering victims for a case against Ozempic because it has now been shown to increase your risk of vision loss. In fact, a study in JAMA showed that people on these drugs had a higher risk of a condition called NAION, which causes sudden vision loss, swelling, and pain in the eyes. How bad do you want to lose weight that you'll go through all of this terrible stuff, but you won't actually just maybe take control of your health and your diet? This is asinine to me.
Get emergency use authorization because, like, after you have so many adverse reactions, it's supposed to get like a black label warning.
And this
is way beyond that, it sounds.
There's been a few that have had, because the way that they present this, I have to look back at my chart at whether or not this was fast-tracked or emergency use, because I can't remember now. But the way that they present it is that this is a life-saving intervention because otherwise you're going to have a heart attack and die from your obesity. So that's how they justify the fact that these are still on the market.
We'd rather have let you have one on our drug than naturally.
Yes. Now, the drugs have also...
The bright side, though, so if you have permanent diarrhea, it's probably a good thing your vision goes so that you don't have to see.
Yeah, but you still got your smell, apparently.
Well, maybe they can add that in there somewhere, too. I don't know.
Just paralyze you all together so you're basically a zombie.
I'm just going to be like our 12-year-old Dunkin' Donuts and be like, Mommy, gross.
Yeah.
Gross. Now I can't eat my food. Thanks, Mommy. Gross.
Yeah.
Gross.
Okay. Also, these drugs have been linked to malnutrition because they say you don't eat all that often. And certainly you're not eating anything good that's nourishing your body. Also, you look old because it dehydrates you. So your skin starts to sag as you lose weight. So much so there's a name for this. It's called Ozempic face. I'm sure I don't have to paint a picture for what that looks. I mean, it's basically like upwardly mobile middle-aged housewives who all of a sudden look like a zombie and look like they're shooting cocaine because they have circles. Like, you know, right, what this looks like. It's not a picture of health. So why is the media celebrating this? If it's a win for people to lose weight, even though they're now on lifelong drugs, it's a win for big corporations, clearly, because they can keep selling you cheap, poisonous food and sell you a drug to mask the effects of that is it a win for society if we have to do it this way? And in fact, even Arnold Schwarzenegger in his Pump Club newsletter said that this is a move in the right direction. That surprised me. Only his newsletter quite correctly points out the weight loss drug had no impact whatsoever on what the CDC calls severe obesity. Take a look at this chart. This is up over 9%. So these are people who are severely obese, is even higher since 2021. So it's only the kinda obese that are being helped by Ozempic, not the severely obese. This is a really interesting chart. Look how much higher obesity, severe obesity is in women to the far right than men. And also the age group that has the highest rate of severe obesity between 40 and 59. So I don't know. Can you celebrate? Is it time to pop the cork on the champagne to celebrate peak obesity when, one, it has to do with this really dangerous drug and it makes you a lifelong client of that drug, and it does not mask any of the issues that are causing obesity? Do you want to celebrate this? It's weird that the media does, right?
No, it's not at all, because this is exactly what they want. They want to, from cradle to grave. This is exactly what they want. From cradle to grave, this is what they want. They want you to be addicted to their statins, to all of these other things that you require. They want to feed you highly processed food, which causes this morbid obesity, which causes the heart disease, and all of these other things. And then they want to get you on statins. So they want to control the process from beginning to end.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they want.
Definitely that seems to be the case.
All right, we got more news to get to here on your, what is it, Taco Tuesday?
It's Tuesday.
We're going to talk with a veteran pilot who's suing the FAA over COVID. We're going to give you a little teaser of that, because, and then you can watch the full interview later today on Rumble. I believe, Philip, will we have to release it just on Rumble because of what we talk about, or can we? Well, you don't know yet. We'll see.
I don't know yet.
We'll see. Okay. Because there, anytime we have to talk about COVID stuff, you know, we get flagged, and, you know, we don't need any extra incentives for YouTube to take down our channel and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we'll do that in a second. We're going to get there. But first,
we want to tell you about Buy Optimizers, because if you would like to optimize your health, not with big pharma, but with natural supplements, then you might want to look into Buy Optimizers, because they have an essential breakthrough magnesium product that allows you to have peak performance in your workouts, in your mental performance, and in your sleep, because you know that you can change your habits and improve your health in a short period of time. And pretty much every dietitian and influencer that I listen to, every bit of research that I've shown shows that magnesium helps you to have peak performance in all of these indicators. Well, Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers has 7 forms of highly bioavailable magnesium scientifically designed to elevate your sleep, support workout recovery, and boost muscle growth. So picture just drifting off to sleep effortlessly, waking up with more energy than normal, watching your fitness goals materialize, being able to concentrate throughout the day. That's what magnesium offers to us. So don't let another year fade away. Seize control of your health destiny with Magnesium Breakthrough. Now you can get 10% off your order if you use the code REDACTED. Head on over to buyoptimizers.com/redacted. It's time to make those final days of the year legendary with Magnesium Breakthrough. One more time, visit buyoptimizers.com/redacted and use the code REDACTED to get your 10% off.
LA Droner in our Rumble chat says, don't eat after 6 p.m. and you will lose weight. That's true. Anything really after 7 p.m., like nothing good happens after 7 p.m. for eating, right? So eat a good healthy meal, dinner.
Well, it depends what you mean by good. Because,
well, some good stuff happens after, but keep, you know, don't eat after 7, and don't be like George Costanza in bed with a sandwich, if you know what I mean. And then, I guess, you know, then kind of fast until the morning, you get all that fasting time in there. As Bodie Master says, Taco Bell helps.
Oh, that will also cause lifelong diarrhea.
That's right.
Yes.
One of Natalie's favorites. All right. Well, American Airlines destroyed this pilot's career for whistleblowing their illegal COVID mandates. First, it started with the masks. And the reason that the masks were so problematic is that it actually inhibits a pilot's ability to fly and do their job, the oxygen in their blood. Well, he called foul on that. Then when they started mandating the vaccines, he called double foul. And then he was unceremoniously put on administrative leave without pay and told to basically sit in a corner. Well, now this FAA whistleblower is, he came forward, he blew the whistle on the illegal termination of other pilots who did the same thing for refusing to take the COVID vaccination. And after blowing the whistle at American Airlines, they placed him on unpaid leave for these 2 years. Captain Bahij Saliba sat down with me just a few minutes ago, right before the show, and I wanted to show you just a piece of that interview right now, because, again, we're sort of flying under the issue with censorship here. But you have to hear what he is now battling, because he's suing the FAA specifically over these illegal mandates. Listen, can you just walk me back? What was the catalyst for you, Captain? What prompted this whole thing? You're an American Airlines pilot flying for many, many years. And what was the moment you noticed something was wrong and you had to speak out?
It became very clear to me that there is a major violation of the FAA medical certification of pilots. And this is the underlying reason why I took action and took many legal actions to stop the behavior of the airlines. And early on in 2021, the airline and the union, the pilot union, made an agreement to pay pilots thousands of dollars to take the COVID jabs. And I had a former co-pilot who I worked with, Will Wolf, who took the J&J jab and perished within 17 days of taking the shot. Yes, wow. Yes, sir. He was a former Navy, I believe, or Marines. No, former Marines, retired and went to the airlines. He was coerced, intimidated, and forced to take the shot or get fired, which is in and of itself a violation that is one of the claims in my lawsuit against the FAA administrator. Stating that the administrator is failing to protect the medical standards of pilots. But that was the reason why I became very active. And early on, when they started demanding that pilots and passengers, everybody put a mask on, I realized that that is a violation of the medical standard. The FAA never regulated the masks, which means that you are, legally anyway, you are not assured that you will meet the standards of your medical certification. And that is a very critical component of what we do for a living in commerce, in aviation commerce. The Federal Aviation Act of 1958, which is the holy grail of aviation, really created the FAA. And the FAA is the only agency that can set the standards. The airlines cannot create a new standard. Any air carrier or any aircraft operator cannot create that standard for pilots. It's a very distinct and separate from air carrier certification, pilot certification is. So
when American Airlines then put in their own mask mandate, that was a violation of the FAA standards.
That absolutely is a violation of the FAA medical standards, because the FAA did not regulate the mask for pilots. That will restrict your breathing no matter how minute the restriction is. And as a matter of fact, my aeromedical examiner, who is the FAA doctor I go to for my certification, informed me that he actually participated in the effort to do such a study or conduct such a study, and they failed. So they couldn't do it because the masking varies across different material, the restriction, you know, breathing restriction. Some masks obscure odors, some don't. So it was not possible to do it. So the FAA never did it.
So it was hurting the pilots. It was inhibiting the pilots' ability to do their job.
It is legally and otherwise. I know of pilots that walked around with an oximeter. They would put it on their finger to make sure that they have enough oxygen levels in their bodies before they performed any duties. That is a violation. They knew that their standards, the medical standards, were not met, and they continued to operate aircraft The difference between all these pilots and myself is that I invoked my authority under my medical standards.
So under the medical standards, under the FAA guidelines, you said, I'm not doing this. I'm not getting a COVID vaccination, and I'm also not wearing a mask.
Absolutely.
And what did American Airlines do to you at that point? And what date are we talking here? Like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the when in the pandemic cycle all of this happened.
This was back in 21, December 6, 2021, is when they pulled me off duty and subjected me to one discipline after the other, took away benefits that were negotiated in the contract, collective bargaining agreement, and then later put me on full unpaid leave as of August 19, 2022. And they pulled every trick that they have to retaliate against me. However,
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry, I just want to understand American Airlines' position on this. What did they say to you? I mean, you're invoking the FAA medical standards. It's like your Bible, your Constitution, essentially.
Absolutely.
And what did American Airlines say back to you?
During the discipline process, I actually offered them full authority of my medical, if they could show me that they have authority, and they rejected that offer because they don't have authority. However, they continued their retaliation, and it is understandable. I understand their position because what they did is extremely unlawful, and so unlawful that it affects every passenger who boards an airplane today. And this is what I would like to talk about.
Yes.
The masking was the prelude for the injections. And in cooperation or collaboration with the union, I saw that coming. And I tried to warn as many pilots as I could that, hey, this agreement with the union is not good. You are actually violating the Act, the Federal Aviation Act of 1958, which is the master document that that is used in aviation. It created the FAA and safety. Safety is mentioned 47 times in the document. Okay, so let me talk about that a little bit. The FAA administrator is not allowed to have any financial interest in any airline or aviation enterprise for a reason. Because every decision he makes has to be unadulterated. It has to be safety oriented. So he cannot have any interest, any financial interest anywhere else. That goes to the common sense that pilots are also subject to that intent of Congress. They should not be coerced. They should not be incentivized or otherwise to make such decisions by the air carriers. So that in and of itself is a very basic violation of the rule of law. And the FAA knows that, and they just turned a blind eye to it. I mean, it was in the public domain that airlines were forcing pilots to take these untested, unproven medical treatments. And many pilots have been harmed and damaged by these shots. And they are actually flying aircraft today. There are many pilots who are injured who are actively flying aircraft.
And what does that mean for the passengers? I mean, we've talked to many pilots, U.S. Air Force pilots, United Airlines pilots, Delta pilots. We've talked to a lot of pilots here on this show. And it's deeply disturbing that these individuals were forced to take it and then are actively flying, and they're kind of keeping it quiet with all sorts of different vaccine injuries, and they're flying passengers right now.
Yes, that is correct. Let me explain what that means to passengers. From the legal angle, from the legal aspect of this, okay? The medical certificate is not just a medical certificate. It is a contract between the pilot and we the people. We the people passed, basically created the law, the Federal Aviation Act of 1958, and we the people have given authority to the pilots to carry us across the countries. And we gave them authority to maintain their medical standards as dictated by the FAA. So a pilot who we are not allowed under the law, if you really study the law, we are not allowed, and we should not allow anybody to impose any medical treatment on us. It's not only the COVID shots, any medical treatment. It doesn't matter because they are interfering in that contract between us and the people. So my analogy is, imagine a cook for a king is ordered to prepare a meal with the ingredients given to him. That may cause the king to die, for example. You know what I mean? So that relationship between the pilots, their obligations, and the people is sacred. And what the airlines have done is they interjected themselves and forced the pilots to take a medical treatment, which violates that agreement.
Yeah, and it's illegal. So you can see that full interview with the captain. It was eye-opening. I mean, there were so many things that he taught me today that I didn't know. How many of you knew a lot of the nuances of this? I encourage you to watch the full interview. We will release that on Rumble later this evening. So please check that out. And please share that, by the way. I mean, his career has been basically ruined because he stood up for these pilots and stood up for the passengers. He's going to go into detail in this interview about how detrimental this is. There's many pilots flying right now that are injured as a result of this, and you might not even know who they are. And they're keeping it quiet and they're flying. And this is, the government needs to be transparent about this. And he's doing his level best to try to get the message out about that. So please subscribe to our Rumble channel for the rest of that interview and watch that.
Well, that's going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow, same time, 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much for joining us. It's busy. If you are anywhere in the path of the hurricane, please stay safe. Send us whatever it is you'd like us to see. And, a friend of mine had talked about how, like, our collective energy matters a lot. If we pray, if we try to slow the hurricane, if we actually put our energy into people's safety and the safety of our loved ones. So I will be doing that over the next 24 hours. I invite you to do it as well, to whatever higher power you believe in. I believe that we can make change together. So that's why we're here. We will see you tomorrow, everybody.
That's right. Have a good night and be safe.